Welcome back, poppies. This is Brain Pops once again, episode 23. And I'm also part of it. My name is Dominic Theodoro. I'm looking forward to this show. But, you know, I, of course, have to introduce my best friend, the guy who always makes the women nervous, but only through his voice. Here's Leonard Stechmann. Leonard, good to be back, Leonard, right? In English this time.
Oh, God, Dom, there's so much I want to say to this introduction, but I need to learn to be quiet sometimes and just let you do your thing. But I'm very happy to be back on the show also.
This was highly improvised. I didn't think about this.
Mm-hmm. We'll see how this goes for the poppies.
All right, but, you know, let's get back to business. We have a guest today, and... you know, I'm always excited, but this time I'm maybe even a little bit more excited.
Well, how come?
I don't know. He's a really, really good guy, and I don't know him for that long yet. Mm-hmm. But today, you know, I'm just going to say it. We have, again, another head coach on the show. He is the head
Volleyball, huh? This time we kind of for English listeners, we kind of already teased it in the earlier German episodes that we have a head coach coming from a different sport.
Exactly, it's not basketball today, and he works for the Helios Grizzlies Gießen team, who plays in the first professional league in Germany, and his name is Itamar Stein. Itamar, hey, how are you? Good to have you on the show.
Hey guys, thank you for having me. I'm really excited and honored for the invitation, and looking forward for a nice talk with you guys.
For sure, us too. Dom or Itamar, whoever. How did this contact between you guys start? Because Dom came up with this idea, and I was like, "What? I've never heard of them, but it sounds awesome."
Yeah, Itamar, you want to go ahead?
Yeah, I all started. We have a mutual friend and coworker, Stefan Dahl. So I know Stefan since a few years. When I started coaching in Gießen, he was the physiotherapist of the team, and we had 2 years of fun and great communication together and great work together. And then unfortunately, Stefan got a new opportunity, moved to Göttingen, where he works at the physiotherapy clinic, and met Dom with the basketball. And seeing the time also very big basketball fan. I really love basketball. We always kept in touch and talked a lot about this. And Stefan told me about Dom in several occasions, and we were really excited to have the opportunity. And last season, finally, we met. And I'm really happy about that, because Dom gave me a lot of new ideas and information. And apart from that, he's a great guy and really open character. I got a chance to visit in Göttingen a few months ago and see how they practice and the facilities there, and got really impressed. And unfortunately, Dom, you are a little bit far away right now, but I'm happy to keep in touch and exchange ideas and just experiences.
Yeah, I mean, that's a nice story, though. I still remember the first time Stefan and me. Stefan also, by the way, got nominated two episodes before by Daniel to be also a guest on the show. But I still remember we went to Hildesheim last year, and we watched a practice of you guys. And afterwards, we just went out, had like a little dinner together. And then we just stayed in touch. And then I also remember after the season, we had like a little Zoom meeting, which with Stefan, your new assistant, if I remember correctly. And this Zoom meeting, you know, we just talked a little bit about training. And obviously, as Leonard always says, it took us 2.5 hours to complete that Zoom meeting. So there's a connection. And I'm really looking forward to having you on the show today. And since Leonard already talked about it, you know, we are kind of like have a basketball background, of course. Volleyball, we have not touched yet on the podcast. And that's why I would like you, Itamar, just to give us a little, you know, take us with you and just explain a little how you finally got to be a coach for Helios Grizzlies Gießen. Just tell us your story.
Oh wow! Yeah,
everything right now.
Everything.
Please, no questions. You talk for half an hour and then we're done.
Yeah, it should take about half an hour to tell the whole story. So I guess your usual viewers or listeners are not really familiar with volleyball and the sport, and I don't know what they think about it. But volleyball is actually quite a developed sport in Europe, not as basketball or football per se, but it's very professional in some countries and very popular. A lot of time in small cities and towns. So I'm coming also from a very small place in Israel. I was born and raised in Israel and came from a small place. It's called a kibbutz, you know, so a very small community where everybody loves volleyball. So my father was born in Poland, where volleyball is huge. And since I was small, he always said, okay, you play volleyball, you know, we are here and you have to play volleyball. So yeah, I wanted to play basketball. I practiced basketball at some point and always played with my friends. But at the end, that was there. And I grew up with this. I became actually pretty good at it. And when I was 20, I was presented with the opportunity to go and play abroad. So my first station was in Holland. And I played 3 years in Holland, winning a national championship there. And it was going well. I got an offer to go to France, where the league is very, very strong, and was quite not so bad money. Great experience. Spent 4 years in France, and also had a chance to win a French Cup there, which was awesome. But I had a small injury, and after the injury, I couldn't really get back to myself. And then I also got married at the time. My wife was pregnant, and then suddenly I was stuck without a club, you know. Which was very scary at the moment. And then I had a contact in Germany to come play for a small club playing in the second Bundesliga and wanted to go up in Bottrop.
That's in the north, right?
And yeah, this is in North Rhine-Westphalia. So it's Bottrop is just on the border with Essen. And went there. Played there for 1 year, got up to the first league and started to playing really well in the first league. Then there's a lot of stories around what happened there with the money, but not easy situation. Moved to Mers and from Mers to Coburg, which is not so far from where you are right now, Dom. And
yep.
In Coburg, I had a very bad injury on my neck and during a game. And then I just, was not sure if I can play again. And the club was in a difficult situation. So they said, okay, can you maybe be coach and do this for us? And I said, okay, yeah, I go study. And I went study and I did a license in Germany and coached in Coburg. And we were pretty successful in the first season. But again, was no money. Club went bankruptcy. And then I got an offer from Gießen to go to the second league again as a coach now and try to promote the team. The first goal was I came in 2016 and they said Project 2020 in 2020 we want to be in the first league, so you have 4 years, we have to do it. I said okay, let's go. First year, second place. Second year was a bit tough, but we finished also at the third place, which is eventually possible to promote from. And the club suddenly decided, no, we do it now. So after 2 years, 2018, we premiered in the first Bundesliga. And two tough, really tough and demanding years in the first league with a club with a small budget, but a great passion for the sport and the amazing developments, what we did here. And now we are coming up to our third season in the league. And I don't know if it was the short or long version, but that's kind of how I ended up in Gießen or in Hildesheim, where we play.
Sounds like a lot of questions already popped in my mind. So I think the length was perfect.
Shoot.
I just don't know where to start. Leonard, do you ever know where to start, or you want me to start?
Well, the first easier question was that came to my mind, what leagues are good in Europe in volleyball, where you said that France was a pretty good league with good money, and where does Germany maybe rank?
Yeah, that's a great question. In volleyball, the top leagues are actually Russia, where there is almost unlimited amount of money.
Like in any sport, basically.
Yeah, yeah, it's just crazy there. It's just crazy there. And they can, okay, maybe in other sports, it doesn't sound like much, but they have players who are earning €1 million, $1 billion for season.
Ah, okay, wow.
In volleyball, it's crazy. It's something unbelievable. Mm. Poland is a very, very strong league. And of course, Italy dominating volleyball. In the club level. Those are the top three leagues. And then you have leagues like France, which is just under that, which is a very strong league, and Turkey. Germany is right there, I think, just under France and maybe above Turkey. So it's a very strong and recognized league in Europe. Lacks a little bit the financials, because in Germany, as you know from basketball, we are all dependent on private sponsoring and money revenues from fans and the home, and no really support from the local cities or regions, which like in other countries is very common that the city wants a volleyball team. Okay, here, take the money, and on this you can add up the sponsors. But Germany is a competitive league. You have team like Berlin or Friedrichshafen, which have pretty nice budgets, compete really high in Europe, Champions League. And the competition is developing every year.
Oh, okay. Mm. Yeah, so I would say, Dom and Itamar, let's talk a little bit about the sport itself, maybe to get us on some level that we can talk a little bit in depth. You said you played basketball and you also watched a couple of basketball practices. Do you see any parallels there, or is it a... Like, I mean, it's also a team sport. It's pretty intense. As I watched, I was in Portugal for university European championships, and I watched a lot of volleyball there, and I really got interested into it. And what I felt was also a really big team vibe, a lot of hand checking, clapping, and a lot of voices, a lot of talking. So I was like, okay, maybe there are a couple of parallels, or some basics about it maybe.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of parallels when you talk about team sports in general. Teamwork is one thing that you cannot be successful on your own, and in basketball it's very obvious how every movement of the ball and of player is affecting the end result. So there is the big synchronization has to be always be there for the success team. At least you can really recognize it, and when you look to European basketball, it's even more obvious how team is dependent on each other, and it's not an isolated game like sometimes in the NBA, you know, you can just isolate one guy. And in volleyball it's the same. I mean, in volleyball you have one action in the whole spectrum of the game that you can actually control from start to finish. One guy can control what will happen. It's the serve. So only by serving, you have the ball in your hands, you can toss it however you want, or you can, and you can swing and hit it the way you want. So you have you're the only one who has control. Since this situation, you have no control of what will happen before the ball comes to you. You always have to react, and the players around you have to react what happens before and after you touch the ball. So it's technically a very, very difficult sport, which you always need the help of each other on the court. You have one touch of the ball, and with this one touch, you have to affect the result. So one good touch in the reception or in the passing the ball can affect the whole rally, the whole end result of the score. And you cannot touch the ball twice. You cannot dribble twice. You cannot pick and roll, you know. You touch the ball once, and then the other guy has to make a perfect contact. It depends on the speed of the attacker coming next to him. Yeah, a lot of ins and outs. I mean, it's a very complicated technical sport and also tactical sport, but I think also very beautiful to watch. So we miss, I think, the main difference with basketball. You don't have the physical contact, which makes it a little bit less, let's say, manly sport in some way. So you don't have really violence or really like hard contact between players. But I think the aggressiveness is shown in other ways.
Yeah, especially when you smash the ball, you know, and then they start blocking. That was very impressive to me and kind of reminded me of basketball.
Yeah, that's definitely the big part where you can show your aggressiveness and your power and force by serving really strong, by attacking really strong. You said smashing, or we call it spiking the ball. And then in block, you see amazing actions in block and amazing athleticism, which is when you ask about similarities. So, of course, the athletic, from athletic point of view, the jump force, the speed, the velocity which you have in basketball. You also find a lot of very athletic players in volleyball. You need kind of the same elements. You need guys who are strong, who are explosive, can jump high, can react really fast, a change of directions. And that's, I think, what the public really likes is this, the attacking, smashing the ball, amazing defensive actions. When you see, saving a ball that is coming to your face at 130 kilometers per hour, that's scary. I mean, and from a distance of 4 to 5 meters sometime, and you see guys defending this ball and turning it into a point. Yeah, I think a lot of extraordinary stuff is going on the court. And yeah, that's what makes it fun to watch it.
In basketball, we always talk a lot about athleticism, but also we talk a lot about IQ. So ideally, you want to have both, But this can be expensive, of course, if the guy has both. How is that in volleyball? What do you, let's say, if you have to decide, what do you as a coach look for? More like volleyball IQ or athleticism?
Yeah, I think it's of course the combination of two. So you want players who have a high volleyball IQ, high volleyball intelligence, who can score points or do other great actions, not only by force and not only because of their athleticism, but of course the general or the basic condition. You need a guy who is tall enough, who is strong enough, and can perform the physical actions and compete in this level. When you look into a good volleyball team, most of the guys on the court are above 2 meters. And you have 2 meter five, 2 meter 10 guys, really, really strong and athletic. But then sometimes you see a guy who is 1 meter 88, and everyone says before the game, you look to him, he's small, and then he's killing you. He will kill you because he's quicker, he's smart, he has great technical advantages. So I'm coming in our club, we don't have the resources to sign the guy that has everything, or we do have guys who have everything, but it depends in which level. But we cannot just decide, look at this guy, he's top player and you can pay whatever. So we have to find this combination. And in some position, yes, I prefer to get a guy who, I don't want him to think too much. I want him to go and to hit. I need this one guy to go and hit the ball, whatever happens. And I need another guy to do the black work, to do the dirty work and save the balls, bring the reception. And the setter has to be also very clever. Setter is like the playmaker. That's a guy that has to have the top volleyball IQ, he has to.
Is that the guy with a different shirt on, the different jersey?
No, that's the libero. The libero is he's going in and out only in the backcourt, so he can't spike the ball. He can only defend and receive the ball on the backcourt. And the setter is the guy who is touching always the second contact.
Okay.
Spielmacher, how we call it.
Also, that's basically the Spielmacher spot. Okay. That's interesting because he has to decide how high. And then you got, sometimes I see like fakes, like two guys are jumping and then it's only the other going, the one in the back. It's okay.
Yeah, exactly. This is the guy who is giving the calls, before the initiation of the rally. He says, you are running here, you are running there and that. And then he has the reception, the ball is coming to him. And then he has to decide who gets the ball, the speed is correct, the height. It's a very precise work. You need a guy with very high technical skills and very, very high volleyball IQ. You have all the time five guys around who are always telling him what he should do. And he has to be very, very strong mentally. Normally, it's the captain on the court. Even if he's not the official captain of the team, he's the guy who is leading the team.
So in basketball, that would be the point guard, basically.
Exactly.
Because he probably also, he has to know, this guy on the team today, he's hot, he's spiking every ball, and then he has to read the defense probably where they have the good blockers and stuff.
Yeah, you analyzed it exactly, even better than I could say it.
No, you
said it very nicely. And he has to read where the block is going. Okay, this guy is for the last 3 points, but the block is already there. So maybe I play on the other end and the guy will be without a block. He's the point guard, he's the playmaker, he's the guy who has to decide, you know.
And then every time he, like, when do they call the play? Like, because they first have to
receive,
get the first touch somehow, and then control it, and then he calls it as soon as he has it, or is that already okay? This time we always go like this, or how does that go?
No, there are a lot of of course situation. There is blind understanding that is coming into work in practice, but
mm-hmm.
Let's say the volleyball rally, we call it a rally, is the point. It starts
mm-hmm.
serve. After the serves come the reception on the other side. It's the pass, yeah. And then after the reception, there is the set. There the setter has the second contact, and then there is the attack, the spike. So before the serve, normally already we have the signs. First tempo, you are running this distance. The guy in the right side, you run this tempo. They're on the left side, you know, we have one guy running in the middle. We always have four options, four attackers ready to get the ball, assuming we have a...
And then it's the timing where the ball goes. So, yeah. Okay.
And then he gets the ball and he has to see which situation he is, how the block is set up on the other side, what is possible. So we have what we call in-system game and out-of-system game. So if we have a perfect reception or a good reception, we have four options in attack, we are in-system, we can run our plays at super speed. And if we are out-of-system, then normally you have two options, maybe one option, and you have to try to just give a good set and try to handle a difficult situation, because you will probably have a very high block and an organized defense in front of you.
And I was wondering, you were already talking about the spike from, and there are two versions of the spike, right? One from front court, that's the where right in front of the net, basically, and then there's a back court where you can just jump from there and spike it, right?
Yeah, there are a lot of different combinations and types of attack. To simplify it, the volleyball court is 9 square meters. You have a 3 meter line that comes from the midline to from the net backwards is a 3 meter line. And you have only three front players that can attack, jump and attack in front of this line. So in the front court, like you said, and then you can also attack from the backcourt. So you have to jump behind the 3 meter line, 3 meters from the net. And then you are also allowed to attack the ball. Two different zones. Then you have the zones. You have left side of the court, right side of the court. You have the middle of the court. All over the net, you know, you have the net is 9 meters long and you can attack from wherever. And we have a first tempo attack, which is usually around 0.4 seconds to 0.5 seconds, so half a second speed between since the setter touched the ball to the moment of contact of the attacker. The second tempo attack, it's a little bit slower, but still pretty fast. So under 1 second. And then you have some balls which are a little bit slower, going over 1 second. And you have a lot of combination. You know, we have always, sometimes if you see the Japanese playing, you see them running all around the place. And, you know, and some guys like the Russians, they just play high balls. But it's there are like endless types of combination, but in men's volleyball, they like to play pretty simple and very fast. The main point, it has to be very, very fast.
Mm-hmm. And so what would be, I don't know, maybe this is too deep now, but what would be a situation where you would rather go from the backcourt than from the front court? That's what I was wondering sometimes. Like, what's a situation where you do that instead of the front one?
The situation, you have usually the main attacker, the go-to guy, it's called the opposite attacker, and he's a guy that his only job in the game, or not the only, but his main job is to spike the ball and make as many points as possible in attack. He's not receiving, he's not setting, he's only for spiking. So he's also, when he's in the backcourt, he's always usable for attacking the ball. So that's when we use a lot of time the back row attack, the second line attack with him, but also the receivers, the guys who has to receive the ball. They are also attacking from the backcourt sometime, and that's usually when you're in system and playing a very, very fast course. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. Those were some questions I was wondering while watching. It was already 2 years ago, but yeah.
I mean, Leonard, if you're okay with it, I would try to bring the conversation a little bit to the coaching side of the business. Is that fine?
Yes, for sure. I was just wondering what the comment made to you when he said that there's no contact in volleyball, because that's something you cannot control coaching your players in basketball.
Yeah, that's true. I cannot control that because there's a lot of contact in basketball, of course. But I'm sure there's also contact in volleyball. You know, if two guys jump up for a block, then, you know, there could also be the occasion that, you know, one guy lands on the other guy's foot, and, you know, so that's also...
Yeah, that's the most common injury, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I was about to say, speaking about injuries, what are common injuries in volleyball? I think shoulder-related issues,
absolutely.
Knee pain, I would suggest, without coming out of volleyball, and ankle sprains
and back problems. So we have a lot of back problems because of the rotation of the hips and the movements that you do when you spike the ball, and also you have to be very low, and of course the impact of the landing is causing spinal problems. But the main and most common injury is a sprained ankle. That happens often when we land two blockers, they jump next to each other a little bit, shift or in the air, and then landing on one foot and the player jumps over the net. And yeah, that's a very common injury. The knee injuries are sometimes pretty bad, like in basketball, the same. Mm-hmm. And the shoulder, just, you know, just from hitting and swinging so many times. Yeah.
And also from operating overhead a lot of times, huh? When you smash.
Yeah.
Or when you surf, yeah, for example.
Yeah. Yeah. Or spike down.
The spike, yeah.
Sorry.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm just a volleyball dummy too, but you know, Leonard is maybe a little smarter in that regard.
You know, when you practice like a full volleyball practice, some guys, they record over 100 or 120 jumps, which are almost full power. Some of them are full power jumps with swinging the ball. So you are like actually swinging full power with the shoulder for 120, 130 times inside 1.5 hours. When you do it on a daily basis, that takes his toes.
Takes a toll.
I mean, that's basically like a basketball player trying to dunk 120 times in one game or one practice.
Yeah, that's a lot of jump, a lot of impact. So of course we try to reduce it, we try to control it, and don't do it like fools every day the same. But at the end, you need to practice this action if you want to go to master it. And the combination, like we spoke about, the setter and the attacker, this combination, this connection, it's endless hours of work until it gets really really fixed and really perfect. So without practice, it doesn't go.
All right, interesting. Leonard, I'll try to bring it to the coaching side.
Oh, I mean, you mean performance coaching side or general coaching,
just
or
first
what
of
do you
all,
mean?
A little coaching, so a little bit more your area of specialty.
Okay, yeah,
you know?
Go ahead. I'm excited.
So, Itamar, in your introduction, you actually mentioned that you were also, I think we can say like that, a really successful professional player as well before you started your coaching career. And I think we had that question before, but I really always think it's interesting. How do you think and how far does your career as a pro player helps you today daily in your coaching job? Is there, I think it definitely makes sometimes a lot of things easier, but maybe sometimes it also makes things difficult. What is your take on that?
Yeah, you put it out really nicely. I think
great question, Dom. I'm very proud of you.
It is a great question, and it is a subject that discussed many times. Some people say, you can't understand the game unless you played it. You can't understand what the players, what goes in their head unless you played it and you was there to experience it. I don't think so. From my point of view, for me personally, it helps me a lot because maybe it's there are some shortcuts because you really can understand and feel and you know the ins and outs of the game from being there. But I think there are also disadvantages and there is... one volleyball book from coaches, actually a lot of coaches, famous coaches doing interviews, and one of the subjects there, or one of the big points, was one coach say, you have to kill the player inside you if you want to be a successful coach.
Because
as long as you are continuing to think as a player, and a lot of young coaches, including myself, do that, especially at the start, you will never come above this. You will always have a barrier of thinking. Then you have to get rid of this. You have to get rid of the player. You are not a player anymore. So at this point, it actually limits you at really advancing and developing your coaching qualities. And so it has pluses. It has minuses. I think I learned to manage it, but I think I'm still learning. Learning every day. Sometimes I think, okay, I know how to handle this situation. I shouldn't do that anymore. But, you know, then comes another situation which is similar. And again, you fall into the same trap. So it's also repetition for a coach. You need to always criticize yourself and give yourself feedback how you handle a certain situation and how are you going to build up the next time. And I think at that point, I'm trying to a little bit get rid of this feeling. I'm not, you have to forget about your playing days. That's over.
That's something. I'm sorry, Dom. Go ahead.
Oh, it's just a quick question regarding your statement. Are you still trying to kill the player inside you, or is it still alive?
Sometimes it wakes up from. You know, as a player, I was very emotional, and I always wanted to win. And when I was losing. You know, the night after the game and I couldn't handle it. And now as a coach, you know, maybe it's even worse. So I'm trying to really learn how to handle losing. I'm doing, a good job at it, and the process of really not letting your emotion reflect on the team and on your decision, that's a big part of it. So trying to handle it and get the process done while you're at home, in between game and practice, and coming to the practice really ready. This is a mental readiness, which is something that was tough for me, because as a player, you can come at next practice and just be pissed off. What did you do? And what this guy did? And the referee sucks, you know? And you can... You know, as a coach, you cannot do that. You have to be really down to the point. You have to analyze the game, and you have to come with a game plan for the next practice. And how are we going to work the next week, not letting this happen again?
But there again, at that point, maybe there your playing days help you, since you said also in your introduction that you already had a, like, for example, when players are down, you know how they feel. Maybe you know what they. Or you hope to know what they like to hear to get back up on their feet. And you said in your introduction that you also had one injury that before the one that ended your career, and where you came back up and were started being successful again. Does that help you sometimes, your bad and positive experience from playing days?
Definitely, absolutely. Like I said, there are some advantages and disadvantages to it. Mm-hmm. I think in my case, the advantages are bigger. Because mm-hmm. I can also look from the side sometime. It gives me a tremendous amount of experience, my playing time. Even as a player, I was kind of, a lot of time, the coach on the court. I like to help other guys. I like to give feedbacks. I was not a guy that was getting angry because of mistakes, you know, because of lack of effort, I would get angry, but never because of mistakes of other guys. So that helped me a lot. Understanding this feeling, I have players that are getting injured and coming from injury. I have one guy now coming in the team after he had a hip surgery just 4 months ago. And, you know, I know this feeling, this frustration, that you want to do something, but the body just doesn't react to it. From that point of view, it helped me a lot. And the mental part of the game, yeah, it's a huge help to understand what is going on in the head of the player and different types of player, because every player analyzes and acts in different ways. And I know I played with so many guys, and that's definitely a big help for me.
And how much do you think, how much do you let your players influence your style of coaching? Like, you probably have figured out one style of coaching, basically, like your base, but then you have a different team every year, I'm supposed, or at least a little bit different, couple of different guys. How much do you take that in place, and how much do you just, you know, this is how I want to play and this is how it's going to go?
Yeah. You always have guidelines when it comes to discipline, and when it's come to the way you coach, or the way you practice, the way you are performing in your gym, and the way you want to play. So there are guidelines to that. We present it to the teams, but they are also very open. So if it's coming to coaching and discipline, some teams, some groups of players, they need really to be strict. You have to be very disciplined and strict with them. Otherwise, if they don't have the rules, they will not act. It will be always. But some teams that I had, you shouldn't say so much. You said something once, they would always do it. And they would know how to behave and take responsibility, you know. So you always have to a little bit adjust yourself. There is no point coming with thousands of rules. Yeah, I prefer that the guys, they would take responsibility for their action and create a positive environment. That's something I really like to see. And coming to the game, that's also something. Like, we had a tactical talk just a few days ago, and I said, guys, we know where we start. I know how I want it to look, but I have no idea how it will look like. That's on you to do. That's on us, not on you, but that's on us to create. And we want our offense to run like this, but I don't know if we are capable of it, or maybe we can do different things, and we have to bring our individual abilities, individual experiences into play, into the team, and into the team flow. And that's what I aspire to do. You know, I saw an interview with Steve Kerr. He did a workshop, and he said something the same. He said when he was first coaching, he came to Golden State, and first day of coaching, and he had thousands of ideas and notes, and I want this to be like that, and I will tell this guy he has to stand here, and this guy will stand there, and it will. And he said, I was just overwhelmed, because no, you cannot do that. You need to let the guys find the way to show them they have to be there. But you cannot tell them you have to stand there, you have to make this move, you have to find a kind of a tricky way. But at the end, they have to do what you want, but not exactly, you know. So it always has, the creativity is always there, and you have to let it free.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Leonard, you're... I see you're nervous. I'll go ahead. Okay. Your nickname is Ita, right?
Yeah.
Ita, and I'll stay with Ita now. Is there like any certain way you prepare your team for the next game? Is there anything as a coach you like doing? Like maybe when it comes, mental things or tactically. Anything you can share?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one big point is a routine. You have to have a routine during a week. Let's say we play once a week, so Saturdays. The routine is super important, especially for the players. Players are almost all the time, they need to do the same things. They're very superficial, or they know like, oh, I have to do that. Last week we won and we did that, so... I like to keep a routine of a concept, what we will do in practice, but of course, changing exercises, changing the focus of the practice according to what we did last week and against who we are playing this week. So we have always the tactical meetings, which can be on Tuesday or Wednesday. Sometimes we do it twice or three times, and showing the team we're going to play against, preparing to it, and try to bring this... points also to practice. So if the team is playing some certain way in attack, we're going to try to simulate it in some way, are we going to work in this against this team in block? So I think it has something in the tactical side, but it has also a big mental influence, because you cannot really imitate another team and their abilities, but you can give the guys a feeling that, oh, we know what they are doing. So we come to the game and we know what they are doing. And sometimes I noticed that we had a game plan. We won the game and the guys were like, yeah, this was great. We prepared to them. We knew them, what they are doing. And then I looked to the stats and I looked to the to how we played and I said, no, this was not our plan. We didn't play as our plan, but things worked out differently. But the guys, you know, they were really sure. So I think it's very important to be very accurate and to know that the information you are giving is correct, and also not to overload with information. Mm-hmm. And very important to give the guys the routine and the feeling that they are ready for the game. So that's a main big point for me.
Do you also have, like before the game, do you give the team like certain game goals? You know, in basketball, for example, you can say, oh, we got to take care of the defensive board. We got to get the defensive rebounds. Is there something similar to this in volleyball, for example?
Yeah, we want to. Yeah, exactly. I think you want to control some player or one player, or you want to control one part of the net or one part of their game. So you want to say, in this situation, let's say player X, he likes to spike so much down the line. He likes to hit straight. Mm-hmm. He cannot score on the line at this point. So this has to, if he wants to score, he has to go cross court. If he scores there, okay, we try to defend. We put two players there. We stand here and there. But that's okay. If he scores there, we can accept it. But he cannot score in the line. He cannot score by tipping the ball, like by shooting the ball. So yeah, there are goals. You know where you want to serve. So you say, this is the guy you want to serve there. In another rotation, you want to serve between two players. So there are specific goals in the game tactic. And yeah, that's absolutely a big point, yeah.
So there are also probably scouting reports, right, of players?
Big time.
Yeah, I can imagine. I never really thought about that, but now since you start talking about it, it makes so much more sense to me. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, the scouting in volleyball is a big point. It's coming to the smallest details, as I imagine in basketball as well. Volleyball is a very structured game. So like we said, there is always the serve. The other team can touch the ball three times. Normally the rally is between 6 seconds, 8 seconds, point is done. I think you can really go to the details, not as in basketball, it's so complicated basketball. Oh, you don't know how they're going to play the offense. Yeah. You know, the point guard can go right, can go left. Maybe the small forward brings the ball up. They play this and this offense. Oh, you need to prepare. In volleyball, it's a little bit less options, but because you have less options, you can prepare really to the smallest details.
And then you got to keep that balance, like you said. What kind of stats do you have in volleyball?
Yeah, we keep stats of practically everything. Every time a player touches the ball, it goes in the stats. If he's serving, you have five or six qualities of serve, of reception. So it's a perfect reception. Oh, it's just a good reception. It's a medium reception. That's a bad reception. And that's a very bad reception. And that's an ace. So that's like, you know.
But how do you measure that, a good or a bad reception?
Yeah, there are zones, declared zones by the software called Data Volley, which we don't need to get into. And they set the parameters. And if the ball is in this zone and that height, in this kind of parabola, then it's perfect. If the parabola is lower, So you keep stats of everything. They even keep stats if the guy received the ball on his right side or on his left side, or did he receive it overhead? So, it's too and much, too much information. Oh, it's too much. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can also like analyze, like I said, if you analyze the attacker, because the block is a big part of the game, how the setter on the other side plays when the ball is in the middle or when the ball is front or, yeah, I think for your listeners is a bit too much technical stuff.
I mean, we already did some.
Yeah, but it's really interesting.
Yeah. So one thing I was wondering, and we kind of already touched on it earlier, is of course volleyball is also a team sport, But in basketball, it's pretty easy sometimes to spot players where you think like, they're playing for themselves, like ball hogs, just shooting every shot. And is that like, since you can only touch once in volleyball and the second ball goes always to that guy in the middle, and then, I mean, like you cannot really, like, or is it possible to play very egoistically in volleyball? I mean, imagine, but it's harder, yeah, I think.
That's a fantastic question. Really, I mean, I love it. It's possible, and you can see it. And you have, like we spoke about the setter. The setter is actually, I say the setter is like a waiter at a restaurant. His job is to weigh the food, you know, bring it nicely to the guy who is eating the dinner to give him a good feeling. You know, that's your job.
It's a,
you know,
very nice comparison.
He need to deliver the ball to the attacker at the best condition that he can score a point. His job is not to score points, but sometimes you see setters that they like to score points. They have 7, 8, they spike the ball, they tip the ball the second touch, you know. They really want to make the point themselves. So sometimes you can see that like a setter that likes to hit a lot of balls is playing a little bit for himself, because that's not a good thing for the team to have a setter like that.
So he keeps hitting the second ball, or how does that go?
Yeah, you see that sometime, you know, and you see guys who are like, let's say, they would just go strong every time they spike the ball. They would go full power, even though you have 3 huge blockers, 2.10 meters, like a wall standing in front of you. So, you know, 2 out of 4 times he would get completely blocked down, and you lose the point directly and say, okay, he's not playing for the team. You have to play for the team. You know, you need to take the smart choice, not what makes your statistic grow, but what helps the team win the next point.
Mm-hmm. And how do you handle that with players when you kind of see that a little bit, a little bit too much, myself than the team?
Yeah, you have to, my goal is to improve the players, you know, it's a big goal of mine. So I want also to give them the information and the opportunity to understand the game better and improve themselves. And if I see this and I recognize this, we should work and talk about it and see how it plays better with the team. And when it works better, you know, the guy has to show it in the game. And when he doesn't do and he repeats this mistake also in the game, at the end he has to sit on the bench. I think it's an opportunity to learn. So I think that's a good chance for a coach when you have a player like this, to see it improving.
So, and one quick question there also, how do you sub? Because there is this, in volleyball, you have to rotate somehow, right? Or am I wrong?
Yeah, we have, in volleyball, you can sub 6 times in one set. So you can sub either each player once, or you can sub 3 players, you know, in and out. So it's a double sub, and then you can change maximum 6 times during the set. So it's every time very tactical, depending a certain situation. You want a better server, a better blocker, or somebody is not performing, of course, which is also an option to change. But not so many changes you can do.
But it's not like when I think back in my school times where I played volleyball in the gym, we always had to rotate one spot after a rally. That's not something you do in professional.
Yeah, of course, you rotate. Volleyball has 6 positions on the court. You have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, And you rotate always to your left. So clockwise, and every time you win a side out, that means you won the point when the other team was serving, you rotate one time. And when you win your point, when you serve, you don't need to rotate, but when you side out, then you rotate once.
So you don't have this one, in basketball we'd say point guard, the setter, I think you said. It's always a different guy.
No. No. At high school level or at low level, the guy in the middle sets, but in high level volleyball, you have one setter, and doesn't matter in which position he is, we find a way that he is running to the net as fast as possible after the serve and then setting the ball.
You have to stand like this in the beginning, and then you can kind of switch it up, right? Yeah. Now I remember. Yes. Now I remember this.
Yeah.
Okay.
You have certain players you have to stand in some way, you know, and it's.
Okay.
Hey,
shoot one, Dom.
Ita. Yeah, I have one here. I think we mentioned Stefan Dahl already. He's your new performance coach for the next season.
Yeah.
I'm really happy for him. And well, I can say you picked the pony out of the herd because he he's really good at what he's doing. But what I wanted to ask you, like from a coaching perspective, how do you value the weight room, in especially in season? What is your take on the weight room?
Yeah, I mean, that's why it was so important for me to bring a performance coach this year at a high level. I'm also happy Stefan is here. I have a feeling that you have something to do with that. I think also for Stefan, that opportunity to work next to you in the last 2 years really paid off. And he's doing a great job till now. For me, it's a super important part. It's so important that the guys get ready in the preseason, have the right way of practicing, and to have a guy that is taking care of that. First of all, it's a big load off my shoulder, and second of all, it's a performance enhancing for the team. Athletic wise, injury prevention is the first part, and of course. Giving the guys the opportunity to perform at a high level for a longer time, not only in a game day, but also during the period of 5 to 6 months where the season is going. You ask about during the season. So I think during the season, it's this fine balance between keep them improving, you know, and then not get them injured or get them fit. Mm-hmm. And this is why I'm also happy that Stefan has learned a physiotherapy, so he is physiotherapist. So he has this intelligence to know how to balance between things, and that's a very important part on my side.
Okay, well, I got to give Stefan a lot of credit. So you just made it sound like that he learned a lot from me, but I can tell you for sure that I learned a lot from him too, because he is just so, you know, he doesn't stop reading research papers. He's just so interested in it. He's so passionate about it. And whenever he reads something nice, I get a message and he's like, hey, dude, you got to read this. This is really, really interesting.
Absolutely.
And, that's also why he's a really good friend of mine. But I'm really happy that he's now with you. You guys are on the same page. And I'm really sure you can make things work there.
Yeah, Stefan is, like you said, is a super intelligent guy and a curious guy. Wants to know all the time, and that's something that you can teach, you know, that's a quality you can teach. And also by players, you see this if we are talking about coaching or about any sport, and you see the difference between guys who are curious, who are passionate, who are dedicated and devoted to what they are doing. They will always have the edge and be more successful, and they will have the chance to improve much better than the other guy. And sometimes hard work beats talent. And I think, just connecting this into coaching.
Yeah, I'm also a big believer in the saying hard work pays off. And then obviously you have to define for yourself what paying off means, of course. And, you know, I was about to ask you what you expect from a performance coach, but you basically touched on that already in your answer when you were talking about it. Leonard, is there something on your mind you really want to get off?
One thing I wanted to touch and again, because we talked about this in earlier episodes already a lot, and that was leadership from players. So we had Dom Spohr on the show a couple of episodes ago, and he was the captain, or he has been the captain for two or three years. I'm pretty sure you guys probably also have a captain, but I mean, leadership is not only one person, not only just the captain. That's a lot of players chipping in. So my question is, what do you expect from leaders on your team?
Yeah, absolutely. The captain is not always necessarily the leader. And sometimes you have a team with a lot of leaders, you have a team with a few leaders, you have a team with the very loud leaders and vocal and you have teams with silent leaders, and leading by example is one thing that I like to say. Leading by example is something I love. I love to see this. You know, sometimes you have the quiet guys who are just coming every day in the gym, say nothing, complain about nothing. They don't care the exercise. They will always give their best. The practice is finished. They stretch their 5 minutes, 10 minutes, hit the showers and go home. You never hear from them. They are the biggest leaders in my point of view. But of course, you need also the vocal and the guys who would know to speak up. And I think leadership is a big point in any team sport. In any team sport, you need the team will go through ups and downs during a season. And you will need a guy that knows how to pull the guys together. You know, you need a guy who can... guy or guys, yeah, because it can be more. The more you have, the merriest. But the guy who knows to aim the rest of the team into the purpose and to say, okay, guys, this doesn't matter right now. We have to do this and that, and we have to listen, and we have to perform, and we have to practice hard. And when another guy slacks down or doesn't do his job, to give him on the head. So we, you know, ask any coach. We are all looking for leaders, and that's something that it's necessary for the team to be successful.
Great words. Great words.
Okay. Yeah. Leading by example, and then keep each other accountable. I guess that's something you're trying to say towards the end. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And then communication. Yeah, you got to keep the communication high and very very honest, probably, to put the stuff on the table that needs to be talked about.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Communication is a big part. Like I said, some like quiet leaders that they are not great communicators, but they would just lead by example. But leaders, the communication is a big part. As for leaders on the court, as for coaches, you know, without communication and understanding and openness, you will always miss something. So you can have an idea if you cannot transform it into the group, into your teammates. It's a big part of it.
Okay.
Do you have any rules on your team? That was a really... that's a really nice question, I think. Any, like, maybe also funny stuff?
We just completed the list today. I hate rules. I hate rules. I hate punishments. I noticed that it's necessary to do it, to have it, you know, sometime in life. You know, I have two kids, and with kids also, my wife is the boss, you know, and she said, you're too weak with the kids, you know, I hate rules, you know, but it's necessary to have them. And what I found really interesting and actually also, actually efficient, I let the team set their own rules. I let the players, you set the rules, you know.
Awesome.
At the end, I supervise it. I supervise the list, you know, I approve or don't approve it normally. I go with it, and sometimes I add a few things. I say, okay, no, this has to be there. But they sit down and they make a list of rules, the penalty, the price of the penalty. If you want to put €1 penalty for being late, make it €1. If you want to put €100, make it €100. But this has to be clear. You cannot be late. You have to be at this time. And they do a pretty good job at it. And yesterday we had a discussion inside the team on something, and it's one way also as a team building. We always look at team building, let's go climb a mountain and stuff like that. But this small stuff that let the players work together are as big team building as any other thing.
Yeah, that sounds very, very, what's the word? I'm missing the word.
Yeah, Leonard.
Sinful.
There we're talking about...
promising.
Yeah, there we're talking about autonomy again, because this...
Yeah, that's autonomy. Nice word for it.
Yeah. Yeah, and you will follow those rules a lot easier if you set them up yourself. And it's a lot easier for you to tell your players, hey, you guys did this. You guys wrote this down.
Yeah, you wrote it down. So come on, you have to live by it.
Yeah.
They don't like some of my rules. So I say, okay, guys, you have to be... at least 20 minutes you have to be before practice, you have to be there. And they say, what if and what if that? And I said, yeah, okay, don't put a penalty on it. I don't care. Don't put a penalty on it, but know that you have to be there. It's your responsibility. And if somebody is not there, he has to be informed that he was late, he was not at time. No, I'm not talking in practice, but before practice, get your mind together, mental preparation is as important as physical preparation for practice, and that takes time. You know, you can just not just drop in the gym 1 minute before and say, okay, I'm there, let's practice. It's not working.
Yeah. I agree. I asked all my questions, Dom. I wanted to ask. I thought it was very interesting, and I was a little bit egoistic today because I was trying to bump up my tactical knowledge of volleyball today, and I hope the poppies could also get something out of it a little bit.
Yeah, oh, I'm hope sure. They start to get interested in volleyball. Maybe it was too much technical information there, but yeah.
No, I'm sure they will. I really liked our conversation. I'm really looking forward to what you guys are doing. One thing we maybe still have to mention that's also... Yeah, I think... Oh, Leonard, we're so much on the same page. Go ahead. Yeah. Do it, Leonard.
I think we're not on the same page. I was going to ask if the poppies are interested, when can they see your team play, Ita?
Yeah,
is it possible already, like online, or do you have to wait until people can get in the gym?
Online, for sure. Now it's preparation time. The season starts October 17th. So we have still a couple of months ahead of us. We do some prep games, which we also try to make it online available. It's called sporttotal.tv. Mm-hmm. It's an application that you can have on your phone, and all the volleyball Bundesliga games are up there, and some of our preparation games are also up there. Helios Grizzlies, so it's easy to find. That's a portal where you can follow us play. And hopefully also in basketball, it will be a open for the public to see the games, but thank God at least for the internet and technology that if it will not be possible, people can follow it from afar.
Yeah, I will put the link in the show notes for people who want to follow.
Yeah, and one thing I also wanted to say, first of all, thank you for your time, Ita. It was, I really enjoyed it. The other thing, I have to give a shout out here, because I think your Instagram profile, the Helios Grizzlies Gießen, I really like it. I really like following it. I think the there's a great variation of content on there, and it always, if there are stories, I always want to check them out. I don't know why. It's I just really like whoever is behind it. Big compliment. I really like it.
And for the poppies, check it out.
Yep.
Yeah, check it out. Instagram. I also like it. They do a lot of fun stuff, fun stories, and present the guys in a fun way. And also about everything what we do. It's a big part of the game today, and I think that's nice. I think if I'm allowed just for a few seconds to, you know, I'm working in this club now, my fifth season here as a coach. And I've seen this club, this team developed. I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing what dedication and passion can do. And they just, from really small budget to growing and making such a big volleyball community in Hildesheim and in the region, people follow us and come to the games. Last year, we had the average of 1,800 people in the home games. Some games over 2,000 people, which doesn't sound much maybe for basketball, but for volleyball, it's really a lot for a team that 3 years ago played in front of 400 people in a small village in Gießen. So kudos to the management and to public relation guys and to our big chef that is, and sponsors, of course. Yeah, it's fun to work here.
Yeah, I'll follow it for sure this season.
Yeah. And I follow you. I will follow you, Dom.
And you know, on my bucket list, it's really up there. Yeah, I really want to watch a game. I hope it works out this year, with us being like also on the road most of the time. That's really high on my bucket list.
Hey, it was so close. Now you needed to move so far away, down south. You know. I mean, I love what you do in Göttingen. What you did in Göttingen, it's amazing. And when you play in Göttingen, I plan to be there, hopefully. And I mean, big success also to you and to your coaching staff moving into Bamberg. Really exciting stuff, and good luck to you.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Okay, so to wrap this up, thanks for listening. For any new listeners maybe that came across Brain Pops, check out our older episodes. We have a lot of interesting guests there. Also a lot of English episodes. You can read that usually through the title. And yes, Ita, thank you for being here. You guys can wrap it up. I'm out. See you guys soon.
Thank you.
I'm going to give you the last word, Leonard. You know, there's a thing he always forgets. But that's why I will tell you now. Just, Itama, thanks for having you again. I really, really enjoyed it. One thing we always do, I didn't tell you up front, so you have to do it on short notice probably. Just maybe you know a person, like a nominee, like a person you also want to hear on that, listen to on this podcast.
Oh, wow. yeah, I mean, that's you should have prepared me before that. So I think it, I don't know if you already did your coach,
Johan.
Johan, yeah.
We're still trying,
we're working on it.
I tell you something, I love to hear other coaches talk, I love to read what other coaches write, and it doesn't matter from which sport, from basketball, for example, Phil Jackson. I mean, reading these books and listening to other coaches talk about coaching, doesn't matter which sport. So I would love if it would be another coach, doesn't matter from which sport.
So perfect. Thanks, Ita.
Thank you guys, thank you very much, have fun.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.